Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we open our show with some major news on that standoff between Native American tribes and police in North Dakota, where the federal government has just announced that it will reroute the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline. We'll have details and reactions from across the nation on today's show. Then we'll share some news about Proposition 64. Now, a lot of Californians don't know that besides legalizing recreational marijuana, the initiative also provides a fresh start to people arrested or convicted of marijuana-related offenses. Next up, we'll have news about yet another upset race in East County, this time a major school board, where a teachers' union-backed candidate appears to have scored a come-from-behind victory over an anti-union opponent. Also today, Rachel Williams will bring you a special report on Syrian refugees who have just arrived in El Cajon, and you'll hear directly what they have to say on today's show. Then on Green Scene, learn about a new program to help save pine trees and other conifers in forests on private lands here in San Diego's East County. We'll also tell you why Boulevard's planning group is raising objections to the county's climate action and renewable energy plans, and why this rural town wants to see environmental justice taken into consideration in deciding where to place big energy projects. Now, before you go shopping for aloe vera gel to treat dry winter skin or sunburn, you'll want to hear today's health report warning about fake aloe gels being sold in major retail stores. Then on Crime Beat, we'll have details about a settlement reached in a shocking case involving a housekeeper allegedly kept in slavery by an El Cajon couple. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interviews will be with Paige Rogowski and Diana Lindsay from the Anza Borrego Foundation. The foundation is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year with some very special activities coming up. Paige and Diana will share details on those events, plus some fascinating facts and history about the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, which their foundation is helping to expand. We'll also tell you about a Toys for Tots drive coming up with toy collection centers at the Ramona Airport and Gillespie Field to help brighten the holidays for local children in need. And finally, as we enter the holiday season, we'll share a special historical story about a child born one long ago Christmas Eve. No, not the one in Bethlehem, but rather right here in East County, when the Spanish explorer De Anza and his expedition camped out in Carrizo Gorge. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. In a victory for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and thousands of people who have converged in Cannonball, North Dakota to oppose the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, the federal government has announced that it will not grant an easement to allow completion of the pipeline underneath Lake Oahe, a reservoir of the Missouri River. Bobby Wallace, a Barona tribal member who has led relief caravans from San Diego to support the Standing Rock Sioux, was at the site when news of the decision came out. History was made, he posted on Facebook. While it's possible that the incoming administration of Donald Trump could seek to undo the action, the decision marks a win for more than 100 tribes that have stood with the Standing Rock Sioux to protect clean water and sacred sites. In a press release issued Sunday, Joellen Darcy, the Assistant Secretary for Civil Works with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, said the Corps will explore alternate routes for the pipeline crossing. She added that consideration of alternative routes will be best accomplished through an environmental impact statement with full public input and analysis. The Standing Rock Sioux have said the pipeline construction on land historically protected by treaty rights was done without appropriate tribal consultation with sovereign nation tribes. In an interview on National Public Radio, Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Chairman Dave Archambach said requiring an environmental statement is a major step that says we're no longer going to ignore the people of this, the original people of this country. That sentiment was echoed by Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, who said the new approach underscores that tribal rights reserved in treaties and federal law, as well as nation-to-nation consultation with tribal leaders, are essential components of the analysis to be undertaken in the environmental impact statement going forward. That environmental impact statement also builds legal ground that would make it harder for a Trump administration to undo the decision and have an action upheld in court. But not everyone is hailing this decision. House Speaker Paul Ryan tweeted his criticism, calling the intervention big government decision-making at its worst. I look forward to putting this anti-energy presidency behind us, he said. Now, just days ago, the water defenders, as the protesters call themselves, had been issued an eviction notice to vacate the site by December 5th. Protesters were previously subjected to brutal treatment by a militarized police force, including rubber bullets, sound cannons, tear gas, and water cannons fired at unarmed civilians. But when thousands of military veterans, organized by Wesley Clark Jr., son of the retired General Wesley Clark Sr., began arriving at Standing Rock to serve as human shields and protect the protesters, the governor of North Dakota announced he would not have anyone forcibly removed. And then on Sunday, the Obama administration made clear that it will reroute the pipeline, giving victory to the Standing Rock Sioux, at least for now. Tribal Chairman Archambault praised protesters for helping to build awareness of the pipeline issues. This awareness has become worldwide, he said, adding that the water protectors can now return home. He concludes, now their purpose has been served, and it is time now for them to enjoy this winter with their families. But Dallas Goldtooth, lead organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, is asking pipeline opponents to keep up the pressure because while President Obama has granted us a victory today, that victory isn't guaranteed in the next administration. The owner of the Dakota Access Pipeline gave $100,000 to help elect Donald Trump, who has investment holdings in the pipeline company. Goldtooth concludes, more threats are likely in the year to come, and we cannot stop until this pipeline is completely and utterly defeated and our water and climate are safe.
Proposition 64, which was approved by voters on November 9th, not only legalizes recreational marijuana for adults in California, it also provides opportunities for reprieves to people arrested or convicted of certain pot-related crimes. Before Prop 64, it was a felony to grow more than 6 marijuana plants, transport more than an ounce of pot, sell it without a license, or possess marijuana with intent to sell it. If you were convicted of any of those felonies, you can now have those crimes reduced to misdemeanors, unless you are a repeat offender, have a record of violence or sex crimes, or sold to minors. Also, certain older marijuana crimes can be expunged from your record completely so that you won't have to report a long-ago conviction to a potential employer or landlord. The state does require you to get a local license if you want to grow, transport, test, or sell marijuana, but local governments have broad authority to impose their own regulations, even banning marijuana businesses if they choose. Smoking pot in public is still illegal, and landlords can opt to restrict growing of marijuana plants or smoking recreational marijuana if they choose, just as they can choose to allow or ban tobacco smoking. Selling marijuana remains illegal without a license, though it's now legal to share small quantities among adults. However, all marijuana use still remains illegal under federal law. Even a single seed can get you busted when going through a federal highway stop, such as a Border Patrol station or agricultural checkpoint. President Barack Obama has instructed his Justice Department not to prosecute marijuana activities in states that had legalized those actions. But it's not yet known whether President-elect Donald Trump will take a similar hands-off approach or crack down on weed owners and cannabis businesses, potentially sending the burgeoning marijuana industry up in smoke. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Miriam Raftery with news about what's shaping up to be another upset race in East County. In the race to fill an open seat on the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District Board, Elena Adams has pulled ahead of Timothy Carruthers by a razor-thin margin of about 69 votes as of Sunday night. Adams, a teacher backed by the American Federation of Teachers, has 50.1%, while Carruthers, who currently serves on the Alpine Union School District Board, has 49.9%. That's about as close as it gets. On election night, Carruthers had a hefty 440-vote lead, but as late mail-in and provisional ballots tallies have come in, the lead shifted to Adams. Carruthers is a conservative endorsed by the Republican Party, although it's a nonpartisan race. He previously served on the Grossmont board before losing re-election and then gaining a seat on the Alpine board. He's a chiropractor who's taught chiropractic students, and his goals include assuring that tax dollars go into classrooms and assuring that the curriculum prepares students for the workplace. Adams was endorsed by the Democratic Party and also had broad bipartisan support, with endorsements from all four of the Grossmont Cuyamaca board members, as well as all five County Board of Education members. The winner will replace incumbent Mary Kay Rosinski, a Democrat who did not seek re-election. Adams has said her goals include ensuring community colleges are affordable, increasing college transfer and career training for local jobs, providing retraining and continuing education for veterans, plus assuring accountability and transparency on how tax dollars are spent. Now, in addition to quality of education for students, key issues in this race include contract relations for teachers, as well as project labor agreements requiring union wages for district contractors. Carruthers supports open bidding instead and opposes project labor agreements. The teachers' union poured substantial donations into this race, targeting Carruthers with numerous hit pieces, accusing him of causing a teachers' strike in Alpine and being an ambulance chaser involved in over 120 lawsuits. Now, there are some votes left to be counted, and the election will be certified with the final count on December 8th.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Next up, Rachel Williams brings us a special report on Syrian refugees in East County.
As we walk toward a hotel commune established by several Syrian refugees, an abandoned stroller is parked beside mounds of laundry hanging to dry. The ground is damp from a light rain the night before, but dozens of children continue to frolic the streets. Some girls wore multicolored hijabs, while others accented their pigtails with crocheted headbands. At the villas of Embassadora in El Cajon, a county of San Diego where many immigrant communities found asylum, these families longed for inclusion.
Our goal is to come here, to thrive, to be educated, to learn something, and go back, rebuild Syria again. But we need the support of the United States because we cannot do it.
Now with President-elect Trump, who threatens to thicken the divide between native-born and immigrant Americans, some Syrian refugees feel they're walking on a thin sheet of ice.
We refugees, we don't have a right to talk about the president, if whether he's good or not. This is because they came from the country they cannot express. This is America. I say, you have a right to express.
Organizations like License to Freedom ignites a sense of belonging, validating that they deserve basic human rights.
So thankful for American people to treat us that way, in a good way. That Arab country never in a million time will treat us the way that you treated us.
Oil-rich countries in the Middle East prey on these war-torn areas because they can take advantage of families ready to die.
If she died, if she survived, if they use her as a sex slave, we don't know what happened to those girls, even boys, not just girls. I hear story of boys being sold to a lot of Arab countries to be used as a sex slave. What happened to them? The door will close after that.
President of License to Freedom and translator Dilquaz Ahmed invites the community to show Syrian families the culture of America.
So we work on education, prevention, treatment, and we also promote social justice.
For now, mothers wearing burqas shadow the doorways as they look forward with serious perplexity.
Mm-hmm. Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Rebecca Williamson with news about a new program to help landowners save forests on their property. Across California, more than 102 million pine and oak trees have died in the past 6 years from drought and disease. Over half of those die-offs occurred in the last year, putting the future of our state's forest lands at severe risk. In response, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS, has announced it will provide $4 million in financial assistance to help landowners with dead or dying conifer forest trees in impacted counties, including San Diego County. Carlos Suarez, NRCS state conservationist in California, says, "The dry conditions posed by California's ongoing drought have increased the potential for devastating wildfires, insect-related tree mortality. Removing dead trees and woody debris will help prevent wildfires and also reduce the spread of invasive beetles that are killing trees. The NRCS will also provide forestry staff to meet an overwhelming demand from property owners seeking assistance. The Forest Tree Mortality Initiative is focused on removing dead trees on larger, severely damaged private forest lands. Interested applicants will need to develop a forest management plan. The minimum size forest land property is 1 acre. An applicant with more than 20% of their conifer forest land property covered with dead trees will receive priority funding consideration. The program includes removal of dead conifer trees, though not oaks. It also includes treating or removing woody residue from dead or dying trees, thinning overstocked forest stands, and planting new trees to sequester carbon and help regrow healthy forests. The program does not cover tree removal on land within 100 feet of homes. Interested property owners should apply right away. Since visits to applicants' properties will be made before December 9th, there will be additional funding opportunities in 2017. Eligible landowners in San Diego County can get more information or an application by calling the Natural Resources Conservation Service Center at 760-745-2061.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Boulevard Planning Group in rural East County has voted unanimously to send a letter to county officials voicing concerns that the county's Climate Action Plan and Comprehensive Renewable Energy Plan will adversely impact the Boulevard-Hakumba area. These communities of mostly low-income residents have already been disproportionately targeted for 31 major energy-related projects that have been approved, built, or planned in the last decade, according to a letter signed by Boulevard Planning Group Chair Donna Tisdale. Those include massive industrial-scale wind and solar projects that scrape bare thousands of acres, along with related transmission lines and substations. Though such projects reduce dependence on fossil fuels, they also create environmental and public safety threats of their own. Wind turbines in Campo have exploded and caused a brush fire. Some residents have complained of health impacts from noise and infrasound and stray voltage 1,000 times higher than normal that's been measured in some homes near those turbines. Tule Wind, recently approved for construction in McCain Valley, primarily on public lands, poses threats to eagles from whirling blades on wind turbines as tall as 50-story buildings. Boulders in the scenic valley, gateway to federal wilderness preserves and campgrounds, have been blasted away to make room for Sunrise Power Link, with more slated for destruction to build Tule Wind. Hydrology experts have warned that groundwater and drinking water supplies for rural communities could be adversely impacted by water needed to construct large solar projects that have been proposed on meadows and wetlands, harming a watershed that supports wildlife as well as residents. The county is moving forward with its climate action and comprehensive renewable energy plans, along with a general plan amendment to comply with state mandates to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, as well as a court order following a Sierra Club lawsuit. These mandates seek to reduce California's contribution to climate change, which 97% of the world's top climate scientists agree is real, and that man's actions are contributing to this acceleration of global warming. The Rural Planning Group supports incentives to encourage renewable power and agrees that climate change should be addressed. But Tisdale and the other Boulevard Planning Group members believe that their small communities have shouldered a disproportionate share of that burden in our county. For the future, they want to see priority given to smaller-scale projects close to where power will be used, which is mainly in the urban areas. Tisdale's letter states, There is no need for industrial-scale rural energy or transmission projects that increase fire risk, impede firefighting, destroy carbon-sequestering arid soils and vegetation, increase dust and dust-borne pathogens, consume millions of gallons of water, and degrade property values and tourism draw. Point-of-use, self-generation, renewable alternatives, where the energy is consumed, should be prioritized, she says. She adds that planners are concerned that the pending plans may further adversely impact these rural communities unnecessarily. The rural planners want to see environmental justice impacts fully analyzed in the county's plans. They also want to see solar net metering count toward the state's renewable energy mandate. Currently, only utility-scale industrial projects are allowed to be counted, creating a misleading undercount of alternative energy already being produced. San Diego Gas and Electric reports that it is on track to meet state mandates for 40% renewable energy by 2018 and 50% by 2030. The utility has already met the required 33% renewable energy mandate 6 years early. Planners also want to see the county consider the potential for community choice programs, those that are alternatives to SDG&E, to potentially provide more clean power at competitive rates. Currently, several local cities are considering such options. The letter also takes the county to task for reducing rural bus routes, not providing adequate charging stations for electric vehicles in rural areas, and not taking adequate steps to preserve forests and other vegetation that sequester carbon. In addition, Boulevard's planning group members fault the county for approving large-scale energy projects with only token efforts to mitigate the damages. Tisdale states pointedly, feel-good mitigation measures that are artfully weasel-worded to downplay and marginalize the very real impacts felt at Ground Zero in our rural communities must be avoided.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Health Report. Gels derived from aloe vera plants are prized by consumers for use on skin conditions ranging from psoriasis to sunburns. But testing of store brands at Walmart, Target, and CVS found that some contained no aloe vera at all. The tests were done by Bloomberg News on several products. All listed aloe vera juice as the first or second ingredient, but chemical markers for aloe were completely absent in most. Another house brand sold by Walgreens had just one of two markers needed to confirm aloe. Target has declined to comment, the Chicago Tribune reports. But the other retailers have disputed the findings, insisting that their suppliers confirmed authenticity of the ingredients. Fruit of the Earth, a Texas firm, has indicated it made the store brands for Walmart, Target, and Walgreens using a Florida supplier and fair trade organic aloe from Guatemala. The company disputes the testing technique used, but independent lab tests later confirmed they found no evidence of aloe in the products. In addition to testing house brands, ConsumerLab.com also tested a dozen major brand name aloe products and found only half met labeling claims. Lawsuits have been filed against all four major retailers by attorneys seeking class action status who contend that no reasonable person would have bought the products if they knew they contained no aloe vera. According to the National Institute for Health, or NIH, use of aloe can be traced back to the ancient Egyptians, who deemed it a plant of immortality. It is considered safe for topical use and may be useful for conditions such as psoriasis and rashes, according to the NIH, though there is not enough scientific evidence to prove the effectiveness of some other uses. For now, it's buyer beware when it comes to aloe products sold for topical applications, since these are considered cosmetics and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration does not require pre-approval before sale. So while aloe used in food, drinks, and supplements is subject to regulation, such rules do not apply to aloe gels. Fortunately, there is a simple solution for consumers who want pure aloe vera gel. Grow your own. Aloe vera are succulent plants that require little water and are easy to grow in Southern California's sunny climate. Just break off a small piece to squeeze out the gel inside when needed, saving money and having confidence that what you're applying to your skin is authentic aloe.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with news about a settlement reached in the case of an El Cajon couple accused of keeping a housekeeper against her will as an indentured servant. The victim, who asked to be identified only by her initials, W.M., wanted to go home to Indonesia and did not want to go through the ordeal of confronting her alleged captors in court. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports, so prosecutors negotiated a plea deal. Felony human trafficking charges have been dropped against Firas Majid and his wife Satha Abbas. The couple has instead pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge of withholding a passport. They have been sentenced to 3 years of unsupervised probation and also paid over $18,000 in back wages owed to their housekeeper. The victim was rescued from the El Cajon apartment in March after slipping a note to a visiting healthcare worker. Though she spoke no English, she was taken into protective custody after the note was translated and Homeland Security conducted an investigation. Her ordeal began 6 years ago when she left her family in Indonesia to take a live-in housekeeper job with Dr. Haida Kaba in Dubai. There, she was held hostage and was not paid for her work other than some payments sent to her mother in Indonesia. Kuba has denied these claims. The housekeeper was later shipped off to San Diego to work for Majid and Abbas, the parents of Kuba's wife. W.M. told authorities she was forced to cook, clean, and care for the couple's children and elderly parents, working up to 18 hours a day without pay. They kept her passport, and she had no money to leave, according to the complaint. Rodolfo Cortez with the U.S. Department of Labor in San Diego says his office has been seeing an increase in domestic servitude cases involving vulnerable immigrants. The couple accused of holding WM hostage have said they plan to move to Tennessee in hopes of finding jobs there. But the ordeal is not over for the former housekeeper. She is free to return home, but the settlement did not include the cost of a plane ticket back to Indonesia. The nonprofit organization Bilateral Safety Corridor Coalition is raising money for her ticket. Donations can be made at bsccoalition.org and specify that the funds go to WM. Meanwhile, the rescued housekeeper has been going to school and hopes to continue her education after finally returning home.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway Studio in East County. Today, my very special guests are Paige Rogowski, who is the Executive Director of the Anza Borrego Foundation, along with Diana Lindsay, who is the past president of the foundation and the historian for the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So I understand that the foundation is celebrating a very special anniversary this year. Tell us about that.
Next April 1st, 2017, Anza Borrego Foundation will turn 50. And we are having a special event on that day. It's actually 50 years to the day of our first meeting, but we'd like to celebrate, so we want to go all season long with a whole series of events and special hikes and different things that we can do to encourage people to come and visit all season long.
Very good. Well, we're going to be hearing a lot about that in just a few minutes, but first, Diana, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, how it got started, and what
led to the formation of the foundation itself?
Well, the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park was part of the original plan to create the first state park system in the United States, which is the California State Park System. It was in the original plan when it was introduced in 1929. But when the Depression started, the formation of the actual park was delayed for a few years. It was actually formed in 1933, but by that time, many people had homesteaded and had purchased or had taken lands within the boundaries of the park, so that when the park was formed, there were over 50,000 acres, actually over 60,000 acres of lands that were privately held within the boundaries of the park. Those are called inholdings.
Yeah. The park itself, I understand, is the largest in the state park system, is it not, with about 600,000 acres?
Mm-hmm. It is the largest in the state park system. In fact, almost all of the other parks within the system can fit within the boundaries of the park. It is 90% the size of the state of Rhode Island, and it is the largest state park in the contiguous United States.
My goodness, that's amazing. And it's right here in San Diego's East County.
Isn't that neat? That's actually one of the things we want to emphasize and remind people, that this great park is here.
Sure.
And part of the leveraging that we want to do with our 50th anniversary is invite more people to visit.
So 50 years ago when it started, I understand that there were over 60,000 acres of inholdings within private inholdings. Is that right?
That is correct. So the way the Anza-Borrego Foundation was formed is that the California State Park Commission held a meeting, and at that meeting, one of the commissioners suggested that a organization be formed modeled after the Save the Redwoods League, which was formed in 1918 and which helped save many of the redwoods by having people contribute funds and monies in order to purchase lands, or going to owners of lands and asking them to donate those lands to the state. So a proposition was made to do the same thing within the Anza-Borrego State Park, to form an organization. So in 1967, various organizations came together, including the Sierra Club, the San Diego Natural History Museum, the Desert Protective Council, and state park personnel, and they came together with the idea of forming this organization, which was originally named the Anza-Borrego Council. And then when trying to find a fiduciary party that could take care of donations, that became the Desert Protective Council. And that council then was changed to Anza-Borrego Committee. So the Anza-Borrego Committee of the Desert Protective Council was the original name of the Anza-Borrego Foundation until many years later, when it broke away and became an independent nonprofit organization.
So out of those 60-some thousand acres that were originally in holdings within the state park, how many are left? How many have they been able to successfully get transferred into the state park system?
We recently calculated this too. We have approximately 10 to 15,000 acres left to go.
Wow. So they've gotten over 50,000 brought into the system.
Exactly. We're currently holding some until the state can take them, but we're very excited to have accomplished what we have with 54,000 acres already secured and protected.
Amazing. So what are some of the things that people should know about the state park who maybe have never ventured out there? It's just a couple of hours, 2-3 hours east of San Diego, out in the desert. I know you've got beautiful wildflowers in the spring and hiking trails and stars under the dark skies that they have out there in Borrego. The dark skies.
It's an international dark sky community. Borrego, right. Springs is, yes. Mm-hmm. And we're currently working with the park to get the park recognized for its contributions towards the dark skies as well. But lots of open space creates those dark skies.
So what are some unusual things that people might want to know about the geology and the wildlife, the things you would actually see if you were going out there?
Well, what makes Anza-Borrego Desert State Park special is, first of all, the diversity of life and biology and geology that is found there. And part of that is because of the elevation change from below sea level up to 6,000 feet in elevation. So you've got a very diverse biological area there, with pine trees all the way down to, badlands lands into the desert areas.
Yeah.
So it's a huge area with a lot of diversity. It also sits on the Pacific plate and the continental plate. So it's right in the middle of an area that is moving with our fault system. Anza-Brego sits on the section that is actually moving to the northwest. And the San Andreas Fault just is right there at the edge of the park. So there is a lot of activity, earth movement, uplifts, downdrafts that cause a lot of the geology that is formed there. You'll also see a lot of color in the hills, and the color in the hills are actually the inside of the Grand Canyon. So I always like to tell people, why go to the Grand Canyon to see an empty hole when you can come to Anza-Brego and see what was in the hole? And that comes about because of the earth movement that has happened. All of the material that washed out of the Grand Canyon came down the Colorado River, and as our Pacific Plate began to move to the northwest, which was originally down in Sonora, Mexico, it is now part of the Anza-Brego Desert State Park.
Fascinating. There certainly are some spectacular rock formations and geological formations you can see there. And also wildlife. If you're very fortunate, you just might catch a glimpse of some desert bighorn sheep out there. What else?
You know, it's really, I love how lush some of the areas are, too. You'd think of a desert, you think of it as being very barren. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot to see. There's quite a few palm oases, including our most popular trail, Borrego Palm Canyon.
Yeah.
And the bighorn, of course, are really spectacular when you do get a chance to see them.
Yes.
But
my husband went along on the annual bighorn count.
Oh, yes. Brave soul. That is quite a feat to do. But we also have coyotes and mountain lions and jackrabbits and cottontail rabbits as well, smaller ones. There's lots of reptiles.
Hawks.
I have a 9-year-old son, and we're constantly looking for bugs and squirmy things as best we can.
What fun. Of course, the spring wildflowers every year, the flora and the fauna out there, amazing.
Yeah, one of the things people may not realize that if you are going to live in a survival situation, you have a better chance of actually surviving in a desert area because of the diversity of plants that are found in there. So, you know, if you start thinking about what is in the mountain areas or in the inland, there is not as much diversity of plant life as you do have in the desert areas. So it's an area that is much more diverse than people think, because they think of it as an open, barren space. And that's only true of some of the features that you find there. But actually, it's a very lush area. And the palm trees are actually remnants of a much lush area that existed 10,000 years ago before this desert evolved.
Yeah, I understand they used to have giant zebras and mastodons and all kinds of fascinating creatures that once roamed the desert out there.
Yeah, it's an area very rich in paleontology. A lot of it has to do with the geologic forces that Diana was mentioning, and things are constantly on the move there, so it releases some fossils. The park itself actually has a paleontology lab, and that's open a couple of times during the year for the public to come and see what they're working on.
Of course, it has a very rich cultural resources component as well, protection of the Native American resources, which date back about 12,000 years in our region, which that's phenomenal when you think about it. That's older than the pyramids, the ancient Chinese cultures, so many things. Diana, what can you tell us about a little bit of the history, the different groups that have come through the park through the years?
The park is an interesting area because of the geology that is there and of the fault systems. The major fault systems are actually routes of travel. So you have the San Jacinto fault system, which is actually Coyote Canyon, which is the route of travel for the Anza expedition. You have the Elsinore fault that is actually S2 going up. It was the route of the Butterfield Overland Stage. So where you have a lot of these major faults have created major corridors of travel. And these corridors of travel have been the entry to California from the very earliest times, from the Spaniards to the Mexicans coming through during the Gold Rush to the Americans coming through with the Butterfield Overland Stage. So this was the all-weather route to California. So when you talk about early history of California, most of those immigrants coming into California, if they took the all-weather trail, they actually crossed through the Anza-Borrego area.
Amazing. It's just such a rich history out there. So much to learn. Paige, tell us about some of the activities and events that you have coming up to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Anza Borrego Foundation.
Absolutely. Well, as I mentioned, we really were hoping to really take advantage of our anniversary and invite others to become aware of the park if they've never visited before, to come and check it out themselves. Or if you are a frequent visitor, there's probably something new that you can see and experience. So we have, for first-time visitors, we have what we're calling BPC for free, which mm-hmm. is Borrego Palm Canyon. It's the most popular trail that is for free. That's one of the only fee areas in the park. A lot of people are surprised to learn that most of Anza Borrego is actually free, including backcountry camping. So it's free as long as you don't mind being off not on a traditional campsite, you can actually camp for free. So for certain weekends throughout the season, we are underwriting the fees.
Very nice.
Inviting people to come for free. So the next one is coming up on December 17th and 18th, mm-hmm. and then another one in January as well.
Very good.
Yeah, probably the thing that we want to mention about the Anza Borrego Foundation is that it originally started as the land organization that was interested in the acquisition of properties to make the park whole. It was later that we actually signed a contract and became full partners with the park. And so the Anza Borrego Foundation is in charge of the interpretive sales within the Anza Borrego Desert State Park Visitor Center. And plus they have their own store, which they sell educational materials to help support mm-hmm. the park. They've also expanded into other educational things, into school programs, into supporting the parks.
For virtual field trips, basically. It's called PORTS. It's Parks Online Resources for Teachers and Students. So we're able to send a ranger, so to speak, into every classroom throughout California.
That's wonderful to know about. Yeah. Now, you also have something called 5 Hikes for 50 Years. I understand that if people complete all 5 of these hikes on their own between now and June 1st, of 2017, mm-hmm. that they can get something special. So tell us a little bit about what trails those are and what people can expect.
Absolutely. Well, we sat down to plan this, and we thought, well, what are some of the most iconic places to visit within the park? And we chose Borrego Palm Canyon Nature Trail, The Slot, Pictograph Trail, Calcite Mine, and Mountain Palm Springs Loop. And if one completes all 5 of those and lets us know about it, we have a very special certificate that we're able to send that's signed by an Anza Borrego Foundation representative and also our park superintendent. So
that sounds
kind
like
a neat
lot
challenge.
It's a lot of fun. Now, if people aren't quite up to doing this on their own or they want to try out a more rugged hike, I understand that you also have some guided hikes coming up. Tell us about that.
We do. We have a couple of things. We each Tuesday morning for Anza Borrego Foundation members, we have a free hike that folks can participate at at every Tuesday morning during the season at 8:30 at our office, which is in the mall. Mm-hmm. And the places vary, so it's always kind of a fun adventure to see where to go. We also have for the very strenuously minded hiker, we have what we're calling the 5 peak feat. And we have a fantastic biologist named Mike Puzo, and he is also into fitness, and he is taking groups of people on the 5 peaks in the park. And those are Whale Peak, Indian Head Peak, Villager Peak, Sombrero Peak, and Sunset Peak. And all of those are guided hikes, so those require pre-registration. And as I mentioned, they are not for the faint-hearted.
That sounds spectacular. Mm-hmm. And people can learn more about those at the foundation website, I assume. And what mm-hmm. is your website?
Yes, that's great. Our website is theabf for Anza Borrego Foundation.org.
Excellent. Diana, I understand you also have some activities coming up related to the late Marshall South. Tell everybody about who he was and what's coming up.
Well, Marshall South was a homesteader at the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. He's a well-known poet, writer, especially for his 9 years of monthly articles that he wrote for Desert Magazine between 1939 and 1948, telling about his family's experiment in primitive living on Ghost Mountain. His son recently passed away, and many of the artifacts and articles from Ghost Mountain and from the family were given to me, and I have given those to the park, and they are on display at the archaeology lab, which is open on Tuesdays to the public between 10 and 2 o'clock, and also during special events that will be January, February, and March, when we will have lectures and field trips to Ghost Mountain and displays of the Marshall South pottery and artwork. He was quite the artist, potterer, and writer, wrote over nine novels and did pottery and paintings that many people have, and a lot of those are going to be on display at the Archaeology Center at the park.
And I understand for people who may enjoy drinking and hiking, not drinking and driving, but drinking and hiking, that there's some very special activities coming up for those folks as well. Paige, can you give us details?
Sure. Well, we do take advantage of San Diego being such a rich area for craft beer. And so we have a series that we do. This is our third or fourth year now doing them, I believe. They're called Hikes and Hops. So we enjoy a nice hike in the park and then conclude with a cold beer afterwards. And then we also have Bikes and Brews. So for the mountain bikers out there too, we take a nice ride and also conclude with a cold beer. And the beer is donated by local breweries. We try to change up and have different beer each time.
Julie, the mountain areas have a lot of wineries as well. Are there any wine-related events coming up?
we often have requests for hikes and wine, if you will, but have yet to do that. But although we are trying to craft together a little backcountry wine and beer festival in partnership with the Springs at Borrego, which is our local RV resort. So if we can pull that off in the end of April, we're hoping to.
We'll look forward to hearing more
about that. Go to the Anza Borrego Foundation website, there is a newsletter there called the Desert Updates, and that has a list of all of the activities that one could find to participate in, including the dates for the Marshall South events and also for the brews and hikes. So so I encourage you to look on that website to get more information about all the activities that are being sponsored.
Diana, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that in addition to your roles with the Anza Borrego Foundation and as park historian, that you're also the publisher of Sunbelt Publications, which has published many wonderful books about the history and the geology and so forth of the desert, as well as many other areas here across Southern California and elsewhere. But do you have any books coming out right now that would be relevant to the park and the anniversary, or where people can learn more about everything there is to know about the park?
Well, our two most recent books, one of them is on bighorn sheep, written by the former superintendent of Anza Borrego Desert State Park, Mark Jorgensen, mm-hmm. and it's basically the desert icon. So there is this wonderful book that has won awards. And my newest book has been involved with the San Diego Natural History Museum, and it's called Coast to Cactus, the Canyoneer Trail Guide to San Diego Outdoors. It does include 52 hikes with detail for the desert areas, and what makes this book special is that it's also a field guide, so you'll have species information on relevant plants and animals that you will encounter and habitats that you'll see on these hikes.
Very handy to tuck into the backpack or your pocket when you're going on one of those hikes. And where can people get information about the books?
You can get this book at any bookstore. You can order it online at your favorite retailer. It is also available through Sunbelt Publications through our website, which is sunbeltpublications.com.
Yeah, and Sunbelt, we should add, has many other books, of course, on the desert as well as other regions in Southern California.
Yeah, if you're interested in geology, we have Fossil Treasures, which is written by 23 scientists telling about the paleontology of the Anza Borrego State Park region. We have many geology books. We work in association with the San Diego Association of Geologists, so we have many of their books with a lot of detail on the geology of the area. And we also have several books on the history of Anza Borrego Desert State Park.
Excellent.
And also the sculptures that are found in Borrego Valley.
Yes, those are marvelous sculptures by Ricardo Brissetta. They are metal sculptures, and they're fantastic. A lot of them are the creatures that once roamed the desert, as we've talked about, as well as some that are still out there. You'll find horses and mastodons and
a jeep
and you'll find a bird called an aelornis, which was the largest flight capable bird. It was 4 feet tall.
My
and,
goodness
actually most of the fossil specimens of that bird are found in the Anza Borrego desert area.
Yeah, they're very fanciful. There's even a sea serpent, and if you're wondering about that, I understand it's because the desert, of course, was once an ocean. It was once covered by the sea. And mm-hmm. who knows if there was such a thing as sea serpents? Maybe there was one out there.
Well, actually, that was a very fanciful idea that the owner of the properties, Dennis Avery, who actually commissioned Ricardo to build these, but he combined a Chinese dragon with a sea serpent with a rattlesnake tail. So it's a mythical creature combining different kinds of things. But actually, some of the other sculptures out there are based on fossil treasures and on the early animals that were found in the desert many millions of years ago.
Yeah, they are quite marvelous, and we should add they're very accessible also. So even if you're not someone who's up to a rugged hike, you can actually see those right from your car just driving through the desert. Mm-hmm. Now, Paige, I understand that coming up in the spring on the actual anniversary date, you have a very special event planned. Can you give us some details?
That's right. It's actually going to be 50 years to the day of our first meeting as Anza-Borrego Foundation. So it's April 1st. No joke, April 1st, 2017, at the Steele Bernand Anza-Borrego Desert Research Center, which is a mouthful, but that is the research center that we are, the foundation and the park and UC Irvine are all partners in to run this research center. So it's a really cool event. We're going to celebrate and just hopefully have a reunion of sorts for folks who have not been to the desert in quite some time.
And will that be a daytime thing? Evening?
It will be in the afternoon, yes.
Oh, very nice. So you can do that and still stop by the the annual Peg Leg Liars Club.
That's right.
Which for listeners who may not know, every April Fool's Day, that's held out in the Anza-Borrego Desert and at the monument to Peg Leg Smith. Diana, why don't you tell us a little bit about the legend of Peg Leg?
Peg Leg was actually a mountain man that came from the rendezvous to Los Angeles to sell his pelts. And the story goes that en route, he found some black-covered gold nuggets and didn't realize they were gold till he came to Los Angeles. And so years and years later, in the bars of San Francisco, he told people about his lost gold and recruited folks to go out there. And after he would get their money from them and then leave them out there and head back to San Francisco and tell more stories about his lost gold. So he was quite the prevaricator. He became the grand prevaricator of this myth and story of the lost gold of Anza-Borrego State Park. So, and every year we celebrate it. Last year we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the storytelling contest, which actually began in the early teens by homesteaders out in Anza-Borrego who used to gather at New Year's to tell the story of Peg Leg's lost gold.
So anyone can come sign up for that?
It's always the first Saturday of April.
So you have to come tell a tall tale?
You'll win a trophy, a genuine recycled trophy, and a certificate saying that you had participated in this contest.
Wonderful. And they are amazing. I've heard some of these online, and people get very creative in these desert tales of searches for lost treasures out there in the Anza-Borrego Desert.
It's very entertaining to watch and listen to.
Yeah. So what's next on tap for the foundation? What goals do you have for the next 50 years?
Well, we are certainly always thinking ahead as well, and we're launching a legacy society this year too. So we've been so fortunate to have donors who've left gifts in their wills or their estate plans, and that has helped further our work. And so we want to get the word out a little bit more and say this is a way that can really help advance and help the park in the next few years, because really we don't know what the next 50 years or 100 years is going to look like for Anza-Borrego, but we'll be on the right financial footing to be able to do that.
The foundation also offers scholarships to researchers that do work out in the desert. So it's very involved in education, research. We're concerned about the next generation and having them learn about the desert and the specialness of this area.
Marvelous. Is there anything else that you would like to add that I haven't specifically asked you about today?
Just come and experience Anza-Borrego. If it's been a long time, come and see it. If you're looking for something new to explore, we can help you out as well.
Very good.
And always stop by the visitor center, find out what's happening. Stop by the Anza-Borrego State Park store, which is near Christmas Circle, and you can always get information of where to visit, what's happening, classes that are happening, and we're always there to help you enjoy the desert area.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Paige Rogowski and Diana Lindsay from the Anza Borrego Foundation. You can learn more about them at their website, which is theabf.org, and all of their wonderful activities and events coming up for their 50th anniversary. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's a pleasure.
The County of San Diego and the U.S. Marine Corps are teaming up to bring smiles to children's faces this holiday season. You can help by donating a new, unwrapped toy to their annual Toys for Tots drive. Collection boxes are out through December 17th at four county airports, including Gillespie Field in El Cajon and the Ramona Airport here in East County. The toys that are donated are distributed each year to less fortunate children in our county communities. As they have done in previous years, Marines will hold a special collection in person and in full uniform from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, December 10th at the Ramona Airport. Donations can include new unwrapped toys, bikes, games, dolls, stuffed animals, or other items to delight youngsters in need. Pilots can also fly in their donations to the airports. No reindeer or sleigh necessary to brighten up a child's holiday season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
On December 24th, back in 1775, Juan Bautista de Anza's colonizing expedition from Spain spent the night in Coyote Canyon, an area that's now part of the Anza Borrego Desert in Borrego Springs. Writer Dick Overturf penned these words about that ordeal. It was Noche Buena, Christmas Eve, in Anza's camp. It was cold, foggy, and rainy. Earlier, it had been snowing. Everyone and everything was wet. Babies were crying. Women were weeping. Dead cattle lay on the ground. Hundreds of horses, mules, burros, and cattle were milling around Maria Gertrudis Rivas, who was in labor. Few could sleep, and the mountain Cahuilla Indians were watching. Who were these intruders? The soldiers and settlers in De Anza's expedition had been on the march north from Mexico for 87 days when they reached Coyote Canyon, seeking the promised land at Mission San Gabriel. An earthquake struck that night also, rattling the group's composure amid the bitter cold. After Friar Pedro Font recited evening prayers or vespers, Colonel Anza distributed a potent brandy drink, aguardiente, to raise his soldiers' morale. Friar Font took offense, declaring that it is not right to celebrate the birth of the infant Jesus with drunkenness, to which De Anza replied, "I do not give it to them to get drunk." He insisted that the king had ordered the brandy for the soldiers, but warned that if any soldier was found drunk outside his tent, he would be punished. Friar Font later reported that the people that night were so noisy, singing and dancing from the effects of the liquor, not caring that we were in so bad a mountain in the rain, and so delayed with the saddle animals and tired cattle, but such is the rule of those absolute lords. This was not the first time Friar Font had scolded the expedition's commander. Just 1 week earlier, a fandango, or jubilant dance and feast, was held. The fandango at San Felipe, said Font, was somewhat discordant, and a very bold widow who came with the expedition sang some verses which were not at all nice, applauded and cheered by all the crowd. Now, at the Christmas Eve encampment in Coyote Canyon, after the celebration died down, the friar comforted a soldier's wife who had been in labor since the day before. "She was fearful of dying, and I consoled her as best I could," he wrote. Shortly before midnight on Christmas Eve, the soldier's wife gave birth to a baby boy who was christened Salvador Ignacio Linares. He was the third child born on the expedition and the first white child born in California. A monument honoring the baby's birth on the eve of the Nativity still stands today, about 2.25 miles from Anza Ridge, near the San Diego County line. The day after the child's birth, the weary band of travelers rested before continuing on their way. Father Font delivered a sermon,
and then wish them all Feliz Navidad or Merry Christmas.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road,
A.K. Jules,
Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.